Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. And I'm joined again today by our veterinary voice expert, Dr. Marty Greer. And we love hearing from Dr. Marty. And today we are hearing about a disease I don't know a whole lot about. So this is going to be fascinating for all of us. Blastomycosis, Marty, speak to me.
Yeah, it's another one of those diseases that really scares a lot of people, strikes fear into the heart of many of our clients.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, it is bad. So blastomycosis is a fungal pneumonia that causes very severe systemic infections in dogs and in people. So that's the bad news. The good news is people don't spread it to dogs and dogs don't spread it to people, but they can end up getting it from the same source. So it is quite a serious disease. It's common in certain parts of the country. So if you look at some of the maps, you'll see that it's very common in the Great Lakes area, which is why I'm familiar with
you
this
see
disease.
It, right?
Right, but also in the Mississippi River Valley, the Ohio River Valley, Missouri, Tennessee, and the St. Lawrence River Valleys. So those are the parts of the country that we see it in. So it's mostly in the eastern part of the U.S. from Wisconsin eastward, but it looks like there's a small area up in the northwest that can also have some cases as well. And, of course, it extends into Canada. It's not like it just magically stops at the border.
Right.
Blasto doesn't know that there's a border.
Mm-mm.
So it's spread through disrupted soil and in areas that have a lot of water. So if there's a construction site, if there was anything disrupted for any purpose of digging, that's most commonly where we'll see that. And, of course, dogs, you know, what they do, if there's interesting things to smell in the soil, they are sticking their nose down into it. So these spores are spread through disrupted soil and then inhaling the spores. Every part of the country seems to have its own little fungal pneumonia disease. In certain parts of the country, we see coccidiomycosis, and that's mostly in Arizona, Utah, the drier part of the country where it's in the southwest region. There's histo, which is more in Iowa and Missouri. Now, coccidio causes fungal pneumonia and bone lesions, a lot of lameness. When I worked down there, we would see probably one dog a week that would come in limping. We'd take an x-ray, and it looked like somebody took a hole punch and just punched a hole through the bone. It would cause that kind of a lesion in the bone, very characteristic looking. In the histio, we see more GI problems, chronic diarrhea, weight loss, those kinds of things. So almost the whole country has its own favorite mycotic fungal pneumonia, and they're all bad. They're all unfortunate to have. So the good news about it is that treatments have gotten much better, but the bad news is it's still very expensive to treat. It can be difficult to diagnose, and it is not a fun disease to try and deal with. So it is something people need to be aware of, especially if they live in a part of the state or a part of the country where they may have a problem with it, and if they've traveled and they've gone back to their home or they've gone someplace that someone may not be as familiar with it, it is something that you need to remember that would be a possibility that you need to bring up to your physician or to your veterinarian if you think that there might have been an exposure.
Okay, so what are we looking for? What is my dog doing if it's starting to fight this disease?
The most common thing that we'll see is evidence of pneumonia. So they'll come in with a cough, sometimes with weight loss. With blasto, we'll often see a draining skin lesion on the foot. So there'll be a sore on the foot that just doesn't seem to quite want to heal. And, you know, you don't really remember that the dog stepped on anything or got hurt in any way, but there's this kind of gooey drainage coming from a toe or several toes. I have seen 4 cases of it in the prostate of intact male dogs, and it can also affect the eyes. So if we have a dog that comes in with uveitis with inflammation of the eye that we can't explain any other way, frequently we'll want to be testing for blasto. The really good news about blasto and some of the other things, for the little bit of good news that we have, is it used to be very, very hard to get a blood test that would effectively give us an answer on whether this patient had blasto or not. The newer diagnostics now are being done on urine, and there's a urine test that's done at a lab called Mira Vista, which is in Indiana, and we send them a urine sample, and voila, within 24 hours, we have an answer back whether that patient has blasto or not. So it, number one, can make a diagnosis for us, and number two, it can monitor response to treatment. So as the blastotitor declines, that will tell us that we are successfully treating the patient. So it's not just based on chest x-rays or how the dog is feeling, but we can actually numerically manage these guys and know how things are coming along.
Wow.
The lab can also do a blood test level on the drug that we're using, so it can tell us if we are effectively getting the right amount of drug into the patient. Sometimes we'll want to use generic drugs because of the cost, and you're not always certain that the generic is going to be as effective as you would hope for. So if you can do the blood test to check the blood level of the drug, then you have a much better handle on whether this patient is going to respond well to a generic or if you need to go to the name brand. So I will say that compounded drugs for this treatment are not recommended. Generics are okay, but compounded drugs are not, because they're just not bioavailable enough to be effective in managing these guys. And because it's expensive, people try to search for alternative treatment options to make it more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be really careful that you're not using a drug that's ineffective in the treatment of this, because these guys get sick really fast, and they can go downhill almost sometimes before you can get a diagnosis. Even
wow.
though it's 24 hours to get a result back, it can be
wow.
really acute and very severe.
Hmm. Okay, so they come in. Are we seeing fever? Are we seeing lethargy? I mean, are these like sick and dying dogs, like ADR dogs we call them, ain't doing right?
Yeah, they can be. They usually will run a fever. They'll usually come in with a cough, weight loss, lethargy, not feeling well. And then, like I said, a draining skin lesion. I've seen it in the prostate a few times. So if we have a dog that comes in, and that's actually how we made one of the most recent diagnoses, was the dog was sent to us for an enlarged prostate, but he was only 3. And, you know, you usually don't see prostate enlargement until the dogs are over age 5. And so I took a look at the dog on the ultrasound and said, yeah, this prostate's not right. I think it's probably blasto. The dog had no signs of a cough. We took chest films. His chest was clear. Sent the urine sample in. Yeah, it was blasto. And I then immediately sent him to see the ophthalmologist, because if these guys are well managed by an ophthalmologist that can manage their uveitis and keep the inflammation under control, they'll stay visual. But I have seen dogs come in that, even with successful treatment, will end up with permanent vision damage, perhaps even blindness. So I don't mess around with the eyes. I am not an ophthalmologist. I know how to treat prostate disease. I know how to refer to an ophthalmologist. And I really want to make sure that people know that they have the option to go see an ophthalmologist and make sure that they're adequately managed for their visual needs as well, because it would be a shame to have a dog lose their vision because it wasn't adequately addressed. And it takes some fairly aggressive management. Not expensive, but aggressive management.
And so on the uveitis, are you talking about just green gook in the eyes, or are they more inflamed, or what are they presenting as?
Yeah, uveitis is inflammation of the back part of the eye. So
okay.
It's not something that you'll frequently see. You generally don't see discharge from the eyes. Sometimes the dogs will be painful. Sometimes you'll see a change in how bright the eye looks. Instead of looking in and seeing a nice shiny eye and a nice clear brown or blue iris, you'll see this kind of hazy look. It just doesn't look right. And sometimes you'll see nothing at all, but the ophthalmologist, with their ability to look into the eye with the ophthalmoscope and with other tools, can see inflammation in the back part of the eye that we can't appreciate without special diagnostic tools.
Hmm. Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so treatment then, once we've diagnosed?
Treatment is an oral medication, either itraconazole or fluconazole. In the old days, we used to have to use amphotericin B, and it required being in the hospital and IV fluids because it would shut down the kidneys. It was really expensive, and it was a really tough treatment on the dogs. Now we use either itraconazole or fluconazole, depending on which organ is involved, and I usually call and talk to the Mira Vista Lab experts because they can give us a better idea of what drug we want to use based on which organs are involved.
And they can tell that from the urine sample?
From the urine and what organs we're seeing clinically are affected, yes. So I call them, and I really count on their input. And, of course, if it's in the central nervous system, if the dog comes in with a seizure or the dog comes in with an eye problem, it's a more serious prognosis. But we can save about 90% of the dogs if we use itraconazole and about 75% if we use fluconazole. But up to 25% will die in the first week after diagnosis. It's fast.
My eyes just spun counterclockwise, Marty. That's telling me that 25% of these dogs die no matter what.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Either they're euthanized or they die because they're so sick. I mean, it's really, this is nothing to joke
no.
around with. This is really quite bad. So 2 summers ago, we haven't seen any this year, but 2 summers ago, we had, I think, about 14 or 15 dogs in with us. And for us, in the part of Wisconsin that we're in, that's a lot. in some parts of Wisconsin, they see them all year round, every day. It's just blasto, blasto, blasto. You get up into Rhinelander and some of the more northern parts of Wisconsin. But fortunately, we don't see as much of it most times, but climate change and different soil conditions make a big difference in what the incidence is.
Wow.
Yeah, it's bad.
And so you see this more summer, you're saying, more in the particular time of year?
Generally, yes, because the soil is disrupted. We don't have a lot of access to warm soil in January.
Yeah, you're in Wisconsin. There's snow. I forgot.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit.
All right, crew. We've got some information for you, so join me as we visit with Vicki Ronchett. She's going to give us some more information about Show Dog Prep School, which there was a podcast a few weeks back. If you didn't listen to it, we'll make sure there's a link in the show notes. Vicki, tell us a little bit more about Show Dog Prep School and some of what you're seeing with the students.
So Show Dog Prep School has been in the making for a while. It's the first all-online confirmation school, and we're dedicated to confirmation handling, training, and anything having to do with dog shows. So anything that you could possibly need for your show dog, training the dog to gait, training the dog to stack, talking about raising puppies and dealing with shy or fearful dogs, traveling with your dogs, nail trims, your own course on canine structure.
Yes.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah, we've got all that. So I'm really excited about it.
And what do we call that? We call that full disclosure. I am, thank you very much, honored to be one of the instructors for Show Dog Prep School. And I just think this is a really great opportunity for people who don't have necessarily all of the resources they need right at their fingertips. Yeah?
Exactly. Exactly. A lot of people that I coach all over the world actually are in need of a little bit more help for the show ring. They're finding classes in the area sometimes, but it's more of a run-through class, not a lot of instruction. And sometimes they're just lost. And then there's also people who've been doing this for a long time, but they're either stuck with a particular dog on an issue, or maybe they just feel like they never really got great free stacks. They really never learned how to do that or some other thing. And so that's where we come in and are able to give them access to all these great instructors and all this information from home.
And I think that that is invaluable for a lot of people. We hear it all the time here on Pure Dog Talk, how grateful they are to be able to have access to information, and they live where they don't have any other way to get that information. So I think this is an incredibly valuable service that you are providing to the purebred dog community. And it is showdogprepschool.com, correct?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, listeners, we are back to the podcast. Okay, so just to interject here, you were talking about disturbed soil. I'm thinking, I just dug up my entire half a property with, you know, I'm remodeling. You're going to give me a seizure here.
Well, don't go sticking your nose in the dirt.
Okay, good. Well, that could be why I'm walking my dogs back and forth on a leash. But I'm saying,
Yeah, just a tip. Don't do that.
Wow.
And, you know, people can have outbreaks. There was an outbreak in Wisconsin a number of years ago at a garden center. One Saturday morning, they had an event. And the wind must have just been in the right direction. It was near Rhinelander. And there was an old sawmill across the water from where this garden center was. And the wind blew off of this sawmill where the spores of the blasto had started to develop in the soil and the wood shavings from the sawmill. And about 120 people got sick in one event. So it can happen in outbreaks. It can happen individually. It's not spread, like I said, from dog to human, human to dog, human to human, but a common exposure. So if you're out digging, disrupting the soil, and your dog is out there with you, then yes, you might be exposed to it. And I've actually had one client that had two dogs with it, and I said, you know, I would sell my property and move. I wouldn't stay where my dog stole that blasto. Not just for the sake of my dogs, but for my health as well.
Oh, my gosh.
And I actually had one client with two sons that were both tree surgeons, and they both got sick and were in ICU. So it is bad, bad stuff. Nobody messes around with this. It is serious.
Okay, so differentials on this.
So other things that it can be, you can see fever of undetermined origin, which means there could be a thousand different things that can cause a fever in a dog that's sick. Coccidiomycosis, which I said is the fungal disease that we see down in Arizona. Cryptococcosis, is another fungal disease. Histoplasmosis brucellosis, our favorite friend brucellosis,
yes,
that spreads. Generally, people think of it as being a venereal disease, but it can cause fevers and similar symptoms. Rocky Mountain spotted fever, mm-hmm, Lyme disease. Cancer, like lymphosarcoma and hemangiosarcomas, on chest x-rays, they can look very much like blasto. So it can be difficult to differentiate in an older dog. Now, most dogs with blasto are young to middle-aged dogs, but we can certainly see even young dogs with cancer and even older dogs with blasto. So lymphosarcoma, hemangiosarcoma, other kinds of cancer, osteomyelitis, which would be an infection of the bone, and canine influenza if it's causing a severe pneumonia. So it isn't as straightforward as just taking a chest x-ray. It does require some additional diagnostics. And like I said, this urine test has just been a huge breakthrough. So it's made life much, much better for us in trying to figure this out. So blasto is usually in an intact male, young adult dog, summer and fall, and most frequently in Dobermans, Weimaraners, Coonhounds, Retrievers, and other hunting large breed dogs.
Right.
Mostly because of their lifestyle, not because of necessarily a breed predisposition like certain other diseases. But certainly, those are the dogs that are out digging holes and excavating in your yard. And
I don't think I have it, because if you could see the holes, I'm saying, they'd all be dead by now.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so, and the other thing that you said that I think is really important to kind of go back to is that it lives in the soil. So if you have a sick dog, it's there.
Yes. And we also recommend, if you do lose a dog to blasto, that they're cremated and not buried, because we don't want to further seed soil. So, yeah, it's kind of gruesome to have to think about those things. But
wow.
That's the way it works.
Wow. So treatment takes a long time, yes?
Long time.
The person who referred us to this and said, please do a podcast on this topic, had a dog who was affected. She said it just took forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, a minimum of 4 to 6 months of treatment. And like I said, monitoring the urine test will allow you to determine if they're responding well to therapy. And like I said, different treatments are, you know, for different things. Usually, if it's in the brain or if it's in the prostate, fluconazole is recommended. It's a less expensive treatment. There's a generic of both fluconazole and itraconazole. But like I said, you do not want to use compounded itraconazole, because it is not effective. So MiraVista does run a blood test on itraconazole, and it can tell us if the dog is on a therapeutic dose. And if it's not, then you can adjust that dose
Give
of medication.
It more. Okay.
So, right. And it'll be adjusted based on that response, because 10 to 20% of the dogs that are on medication don't have a therapeutic blood level. So you don't want to be spending a lot of money treating a disease that's not making any progress.
Right.
You do want to. So, yeah. And we've seen this in pregnant dogs. We've seen this in normal, healthy dogs, dogs that bounce in the front door and you think everything is wonderful. I've seen dogs come in with only prostate symptoms. So it's highly variable what these are going to present as, but they fairly rapidly will become more ill. So it doesn't take too long to figure out that you're going to need to do chest x-rays and going to need to go down another path. If the dog isn't responding and it's running a fever, this should be on the list of differentials for sick dogs, especially if they've been traveling.
Right.
So kind of remember where you've been.
Right. And you are going to provide me with that map, right? Or a link to the map so we can put that in the show notes?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. And we talked about it has a very high mortality rate. The dogs that survive, do they go on and live healthy lives?
They generally do. And particularly if you've got a veterinarian that's had some experience in treating it, they do get you to see the ophthalmologist and you're really attentive and willing to spend the money. But it is not an inexpensive disease to treat, and it is not for the weak of heart. So it does take a pretty significant commitment from an owner to decide that they're going to go this way. And not everybody can treat. Not everybody can afford it. Not every dog is a candidate, because it can be so sick that sometimes it's just appropriate to say treatment is just not the best option. So you have to know before you get into this that it is not going to be an inexpensive or an easy short course of treatment. So it isn't for everybody. And, you know, sadly, even with treatment, we don't always save everyone.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a cheery thing to think about. But
wow. And there is obviously no vaccine for this, we think?
No, there is no vaccine for this.
Wow. And so your best bet is keep your dogs out of the dirt.
Which doesn't seem all that easy.
Right. I'm struggling with this. Wow.
Yeah, right. But, you know, if you know you're in an area that has a risk for it, then you just...
Right. Pay attention.
You have to just fence off the parts of the yard that you don't want the dog in, and there really isn't anything that you can treat the soil with. It isn't, you know, like you go out and spray something on it and magically it goes away. unfortunately, that's the difficult part of just knowing that you have to be really cautious and smart about it. And if the dog shows any signs of anything, you just go in and get a urine sample. It's simple.
Right.
Simple to test for.
Well, definitely sounds like the urine test is a huge deal then, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a breakthrough when that happened. I was very excited to finally have something that I could hang my hat on and give a client a really good, solid diagnosis on whether we needed to go down this path or that path. So between having a better test and a better treatment, which, again, the treatment has probably only been 15 or 20 years that we've had some of these drugs, it has made a huge difference both in diagnosis and managing these guys. So life is better for Blasto now than it has been in the past.
Wow. Well, that is good news, but overall, that's kind of scary stuff, man.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, Marty, thank you so much. Did you have anything else you would like to add on this very scary stuff conversation on blastomycosis?
No, I think we pretty well covered it. Now that I've scared the pants off of everybody.
I am literally, like, petrified. I'm, like, gotta go look at that map. I'm freaking out, man.
You can't go outside ever again.
Ever again, never. I'm concreting the entire property.
Yeah. Oh, no, you'll look at the map and you'll be relieved to know that you don't live in an area that's endemic for it.
Well, thank goodness.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Marty, thank you so very much. And listeners, I really hope that you take a look at these maps and that this provides you with some useful information. So thank you kindly, ma'am.
Thank you.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.